the committee's investigation, the fact that Mr. Kavanaugh's alleged accomplice has not been subpoenaed, has not been examined and cross-examined under oath, has not been interviewed by the FBI, tells you all you need to know about how credible this performance is. The very bare minimum that a person who comes forward is owed is sincere and thorough investigation, and you've been denied that, and I will make a personal pledge to you here that however long it takes, in whatever forum I can do it, whenever it's possible, I will do whatever is in my power to make sure that your claims get a full and proper investigation and not just this. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Since this issue's come up so many times, I'd like to comment.
Chuck Grassley.
The New Yorker published an anonymous account of allegations September the 14th. 2 days later, Dr. Ford identified herself as the victim in a Post article detailing her allegations. I immediately directed my staff to investigate. September the 17th, Dr. Ford's counsel went on several television shows requesting that her client have an opportunity to tell her story. The same day, I scheduled a hearing for Monday, September the 24th, given Dr. Ford a week to prepare her testimony and come to Washington, D.C. On September the 17th, committee investigative staff reached out to Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh to schedule follow-up interviews with Republican and Democrat investigators. Judge Kavanaugh accepted the opportunity to speak to the investigators under criminal penalty. Dr. Ford declined. In his interview on September the 17th, Judge Kavanaugh denied the allegations and requested a hearing as soon as possible. Democratic staff refused to participate in that interview. The next day, September the 18th, committee investigative staff contacted Mark Judge requesting an interview. Committee staff also learned the identity of two other alleged partygoers and requested interviews. Mark Judge submitted a statement under penalty of felony, denying knowledge of the party described by Dr. Ford, and states that he never saw Brandt in the manner described by Dr. Ford. And I can go on and on about that, but we got to realize that what we have done in this case, all the time you go through a background investigation by the FBI, then it comes to us, and there's always some holes in it that we have to follow up on. And besides,
Mr. Chairman,
we're responding to Dr. Ford's request to tell her story. That's why we're here.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Mitchell, go for
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that to support what Senator Whitehouse said, in the Anita Hill case.
Can we hear from Dr. Ford?
George Bush ordered that the investigation be opened again.
Ms. Mitchell, will you
Amy Klobuchar.
For Senator Lee?
Thank you, Mr.
Rachel
Chairman.
Rachel Mitchell, prosecutor.
Dr. Ford. The Washington Post reported in their September 16th article that you did show them therapist notes. Is that incorrect?
I don't remember physically showing her a note.
Okay.
Perhaps my counsel did. I don't remember physically showing her my copy of the note.
Okay.
But I just don't remember. I'm sorry. I have retrieved a physical copy of those medical records.
Okay, thank you. Yes. You also attended individual therapy. Did you show any of those notes to the reporter from the Washington Post?
Again, I don't remember if I showed her like something that I summarized or if I just spoke about it or if she saw it in my counsel's office. I don't know for sure, but I certainly spoke with her about the 2013 record with the individual therapist.
And Brett Kavanaugh's name is not in those notes, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. In reading the Washington Post article, it mentions that this incident that we're here about contributed to anxiety and PTSD problems with which you have struggled. The word contributed, does that mean that there are other things that have happened that have also contributed to anxiety and PTSD?
I think that's a great question. I think the etiology of anxiety and PTSD is multifactorial. So that was certainly a critical risk that we would call it a risk factor in science. So that would be a predictor of the symptoms that I now have. It doesn't mean that other things that have happened in my life would make it worse or better. There are other risk factors as well.
So have there been other things then that have contributed to the anxiety and PTSD that you suffered?
Well, I think there's sort of biological predispositions that everyone in here has for particular disorders. So I can't rule out that I would have some biological predisposition to be anxious type person.
What about environmental?
Environmentally, not that I can think of.
Okay.
Certainly nothing as striking as that event.
Okay. In your interview with the Washington Post, you said that you told your husband early in your marriage that you had been a victim of, and I quote, physical abuse. In your statement, you said that before you were married, you told him that you had experienced, quote, a sexual assault. Do these two things refer to the same incident?
Yes.
And at either point on these two times, did you use any names?
No.
May I ask, Dr. Ford, how did you get to Washington?
In an airplane.
Okay. I asked that because it's been reported by the press that you would not submit to an interview with the committee because of your fear of flying. Is that true?
Well, I was hoping that they would come to me, but then realized that was an unrealistic request.
It would have been a quicker trip for me.
Yes. So that was certainly what I was hoping, was to avoid having to get on an airplane, but I eventually was able to get up the gumption with the help of some friends and get on the plane.
When you were here in the mid-Atlantic area back in August, end of July, August, how did you get here?
Also by airplane. I come here once a year during the summer to visit my family.
Okay.
I'm sorry, not here. I go to Delaware.
Okay. In fact, you fly fairly frequently for your hobbies, and you've had to fly for your work. Is that true?
Correct, unfortunately.
You were a consulting biostatistician in Sydney, Australia. Is that right?
I've never been to Australia, but the company that I worked for is based in Australia, and they have an office in San Francisco, California.
Okay.
I don't think I'll make it to Australia.
It is long. I also saw on your CV that you list the following interests of surf travel, and you, in parentheses, put Hawaii, Costa Rica, South Pacific Islands, and French Polynesia. Have you been all to those places?
Correct.
By airplane?
Yes.
And your interests also include oceanography, Hawaiian and Tahitian culture. Did you travel by air as a part of those interests?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Easier for me to travel going that direction when it's a vacation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here, Dr. Ford.
Democratic Senator
Amy
Klobuchar.
As a prosecutor, we investigated reports like this. So it gave me a window on the types of cases that hurt women and hurt all of us. And I would always tell the women that came before us that they were going to have to tell their story before a jury box of strangers. And you've had to tell your story before the entire nation. For so many years, people swept cases like yours under the rug. They'd say what happens inside a house didn't belong in the courthouse. Well, the times have changed. So I just want to thank you for coming forward today and for sharing your report with us. Now, I understand that you've taken a polygraph test. Dr. Ford, that found that you were being truthful when you described what happened to you. Can you tell us why you decided to take that test?
I was meeting with attorneys. I was interviewing various attorneys, and the attorneys asked if I was willing to take it, and I said absolutely. That said, it was almost as anxiety-provoking as an airplane flight.
Okay. And you've talked about your recollections and seeing Mark Judge at that Safeway. If there had been an appropriate reopening of this background check and FBI interviews, Would that help you find the time period if you knew when he worked at that Safeway?
I feel like I could be much more helpful if I could be provided with that date through employment records or the IRS or something, anything so that
Thank
would
you.
Help.
I would assume that's true. Dr. Ford, under federal law, and I don't expect you to know this, but statements made to medical professionals are considered to be more reliable. There's a federal rule of evidence about this. You told your counselor about this back in 2012, is that right?
My therapist, mm-hmm. my individual therapist, correct.
Right. And I understand that your husband was also present when you spoke about this incident in front of a counselor, and he recalls you using Judge Kavanaugh's name. Is that right?
Yes. I just have to slow down a minute because I might have been confusing. So there were two separate incidents
yes.
where it's reflected in my medical record. I talked about it more than those two times, mm-hmm. But therapists don't typically write down content as much as they write down process. They usually are tracking your symptoms and not your mm-hmm. story and the facts. I just happened right. to have it in my record twice. So the first time is in 2012 with my husband in couples therapy with the quibbling over the remodel. And then in 2013 with my individual
okay.
therapist.
So if someone had actually done an investigation, your husband would have been able to say that you named his name at that time.
Correct.
Okay. I know you've been concerned with your privacy throughout the process. And you first requested that your account be kept confidential. Can you briefly tell us why?
Yes. So as I stated before, once I was unsuccessful in getting my information to you before the candidate was chosen, my original intent was to get the information when there was still a list of other candidates available. And once that was not successful, and I saw that persons were very supportive of the nominee, I tracked it
okay.
all summer and realized that when I was calculating that risk-benefit ratio, that it looked like I was going to just, you know, suffer only for no reason.
Okay. You know, from my experience with memory, I remember distinctly things that happened to me in high school or happened to me in college, mm-hmm. But I don't exactly remember the date. I don't exactly remember the time. I sometimes may not even remember the exact place where it occurred, but I remember the interaction. And many people are focused today on what you're not able to remember about that night. I actually think you remember a lot. I'm going to phrase it a little differently. Can you tell us what you don't forget about that night?
The stairwell, the living room, the bedroom, the bed on the right side of the room. As you walk into the room, there was a bed to the right, the bathroom in close proximity, the laughter, the uproarious laughter, and the multiple attempts to escape and the final ability to do so.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ford.
Dr. Ford, I want to correct the record, but it's not something that I'm saying that you stated wrongly, because you may not know the fact that when you said that you didn't think it was possible for us to go to California as a committee or our investigators to go to California to talk to you, we did, in fact, offer that to you, and we had the capability of doing it, and we would have done it anywhere or anytime. So,
thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, could I put the polygraph results on the record, please? The polygraph results in the record.
Without it.
Is there any objection?
Well, let us see the chart.
The polygraph? You want to all see it?
You hold just a minute, please.
I think you may have it.
Chairman Grassley continuing to be combative throughout this hearing,
charts?
And now we have once again Rachel Mitchell.
I would just like to put in the record, I'll deal with the charts after that. Could I put the polygraph tests in the record?
Mr. Chairman, we had proposed having the polygraph examiner testify, as you know. If that had happened, the full panoply of materials that he had supporting his examination would have been provided, You rejected that request. So what we did provide was the polygraph report, which is what the members of the committee currently have.
And on September 26, Mr. Chairman, this was actually sent to your chief counsel. And I just want to share it with America so that they have this report as well.
Okay. We will accept without objection what you have asked to include. But we're also requesting and expect the other materials that I've just stated.
But, Mr. Chairman, you wouldn't allow the underlying witness who performed the polygraph test to testify, nor would you allow Mark Judge to testify. Mm-hmm. And so I would just like to point out, thank you for allowing this report in the record, but that is the reason that we don't have the underlying information for you.
You got what you wanted, and I think you'd be satisfied.
Senator Grassley.
When was the polygraph administered?
It was administered on August 7th, 2018, and it was the date of the report is August 10th, 2018, Mr.
When was it provided to the committee?
And that's Lindsey Graham.
See if we can't do this in a more orderly way.
He was asking, and I have it right here, and you have it as well. September 26th.
We've accepted it.
All right.
Ms. Mitchell for Senator Cruz.
Thank you. Dr. Ford, we've talked about the day and the night that you've described in the summer of 1982, and thank you for being willing to do that. Mm-hmm. I know it's difficult.
Now, Prosecutor Rachel Mitchell.
I'd like to shift gears and discuss the last several months.
Okay.
In your statement, you said that on July 6th, you had a, quote, sense of urgency to relay the information to the Senate and the President. Did you contact either the Senate or the President on or before July 6th?
No, I did not. I did not know how to do that.
Okay. Prior to July 6th, had you spoken to any member of Congress, and when I say Congress, I mean the Senate or the House of Representatives, or any congressional staff members about your allegations?
No.
Why did you contact the Washington Post then on July 6th?
So I was panicking because I knew the timeline was short for the decision, and people were giving me advice on the beach, people who don't know about the processes, but they were giving me advice. And many people told me, you need to hire a lawyer. And I didn't do that. I didn't understand why I would need a lawyer. Somebody said, call the New York Times, call the Washington Post, put in an anonymous tip, go to your congressperson. And when I weighed those options, I felt like the best option was to try to do the civic route, which is to go to my congressperson, who happens to be Anna Eshoo. So I called her office, and I also put in the anonymous tip to the Washington Post, and unfortunately neither got back to me before the selection of the nominee.
You testified that Congresswoman Eshoo's office contacted you on July 9th. Is that right?
They contacted me the date that the nominee was announced, so that seems likely.
Had you talked to about your allegations with anyone in her office before the date of July 9th?
I told the receptionist on the phone.
Okay. On July 10th, you texted the Washington Post again, which was really the third time. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Third time.
Let's see.
One moment.
Correct.
And you texted, been advised to contact senators or New York Times, haven't heard back from Washington Post. Who advised you to contact senators or the New York Times?
Beach friends. Okay. Coming up with ideas of how I could try to get to people because people weren't responding to me very quickly. So very quickly they responded to that text for what unknown reason, that once I sent that encrypted text, they responded very quickly.
Did you contact the New York Times?
No.
Okay, why not?
I wasn't interested in pursuing the media route particularly, so I felt like one was enough, the Washington Post. and I was nervous about doing that. My preference was to talk with my congressperson.
The Washington Post texted back that someone would get you in touch with a reporter. Did you subsequently talk to a reporter with the Washington Post?
Yes, okay. Under the encrypted app, mm-hmm. and off the record.
Okay. Who was that reporter?
Emma Brown.
Okay. The person who ultimately wrote the story on September 16th?
Correct.
Okay. Did you talk to any member of Congress, and again, remember, Congress includes the Senate or the House of Representatives, or any congressional staff members about your allegations between July 10th and July 30th, which was the date of your letter to Senator Feinstein?
Yes, I met with Congresswoman Eshoo's staff, and I think that's July 18th, the Wednesday, and then on the Friday I met with the Congresswoman herself.
When you met with her, did you meet with her alone or did someone come with you?
I was alone. She had a staff person.
Okay. What did you talk about with Congresswoman Eshoo and her staff on July 18th and the 20th?
I described the night of the incident, and we spent time speaking about that, and I asked her what my options were in terms of going forward and how to get that information relayed forward, and also talked to her about fears of whether this was confidential information, and she discussed the constituent confidentiality principle.
Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Grassley. I'd like to ask unanimous consent to submit for the record 5 articles, including one titled Why Sexual Assault
Democratic Senator Chris Coons.
And one entitled Why Didn't Kavanaugh Accuser Come Forward Earlier? Police Often Ignore Sexual Assault Allegations.
Without objection, so ordered.
Dr. Ford, I want to begin by thanking you for coming to testify in front of us today. You came forward with very serious and relevant information about a nominee for a lifetime position on our Supreme Court. You didn't have to, and I know you've done it at great personal cost. This is a public service, and I want you know that I'm grateful to have the opportunity to hear from you directly today. I'd like to just first follow up on that line of questioning Ms. Mitchell was following, because I think a lot of people don't realize that you chose to come forward with your concerns about Judge Kavanaugh before he was nominated to the Supreme Court. Do I understand correctly that when you first reached out to Congresswoman Eshoo and to the Washington Post tip line, that was when he was on the short list, but before he was nominated to the Supreme Court? Is that correct?
Correct.
And if I understood your testimony earlier, it's that you were motivated by a sense of civic duty and frankly, a hope that some other highly qualified nominee might be picked, not out of a motivation at a late stage to have an impact on the final decision.
Correct. I felt it was very important to get the information to you, but I didn't know how to do it while there was still a short list of candidates.
Thank you, Doctor. According to Justice Department data, about 2/3 of sexual assault survivors don't report their assaults. Based on your experience, I'd be interested in hearing from you about this because you bore this alone. You bore this alone for a very long time, and it'd be helpful for us to better understand the ways that that's impacted your whole life.
Well, it's impacted me at different stages of the development of my life. So the immediate impact was probably the worst. So the first 4 years, I think I described earlier a fairly disastrous first 2 years of undergraduate studies at University of North Carolina, where I was finally able to pull myself together. And then once coping with the immediate impacts, the short-term impacts, I experienced like longer-term impacts of anxiety and relationship challenges.
Thank you for sharing that. And yet you went on to get a PhD from USC, is that correct?
Correct.
As you predicted, there was a wide range of responses to your coming forward. Thousands of survivors have been motivated and inspired by your courage. Others have been critical. And as I've reviewed the wide range of reactions, I've been really troubled by the excuse offered by too many, that this was a high school incident and boys will be boys. To me, that's just far too low a standard for the conduct of boys and men in our country. If you would, I'd appreciate your reaction to the excuse that boys will be boys.
I can only speak for how it has impacted me greatly for the last 36 years, even though I was 15 years old at the time. And I think, you know, the younger you are when these things happen, it could possibly have worse impact than when you're a full, when your brain is fully developed and you have better coping skills that you've developed.
You know, experts have written about how it's common for sexual assault survivors to remember some facts about the experience very sharply and very clearly, but not others. And that has to do with the survival mode that we go into in experiencing trauma. Is that your experience, and is that something you can help the layperson understand?
Yes, I was definitely experiencing the fight or flight mode. Is that what you're referring to? Yes. So I was definitely experiencing the surge of adrenaline and cortisol and norepinephrine, and credit that a little bit for my ability to get out of the situation, but also some other lucky events that occurred that allowed me to get out of the event.
Dr. Ford, we are grateful that you came through it and that you shared your account with us and the American people. And I think you've provided important information. I'd like to thank you for your meeting your civic duty. I wish we could have provided for you a more thorough hearing today. I think asking for the FBI to investigate this matter thoroughly was not asking too much. I think asking to have the other individual involved in your assault, Mark Judge, appear before us today was not asking too much. I'm grateful you came forward, and I'm thankful for your courage, which set an important example. Thank you, Dr. Ford.
Ms. Mitchell for Senator Sass.
Dr. Ford, we were talking about you meeting in July with Congresswoman Eshoo. Did you talk about your allegations with any Republican member of Congress or congressional staff?
I did not. Where I live, the Congresswoman is a Democrat.
Okay. Was it communicated to you by your counsel or someone else that the committee had asked to interview you and that they offered to come out to California to do so?
We're going to object, Mr. Chairman, to any call for privileged conversations between counsel and Dr. Ford.
Could you validate the fact that the offer was made without her saying a word?
Dr. Ford's lawyer is objecting to a line of questioning by the prosecutor, Richard Mitchell.
Consul relationships.
Can I say something to you? Do you mind if I say something to you directly?
Yeah.
I just appreciate that you did offer that. I wasn't clear on what the offer was. If you were going to come out to see me, I would have happily hosted you and had been happy to speak with you out there. I just did not. It wasn't clear to me that that was the case.
Okay. Does that take care of your question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, proceed then.
Before July 30th, the date Prosecutor on your Richard letter Mitchell to Senator again. Feinstein, had you retained counsel with regard to these allegations?
No, I didn't understand why I would need lawyers, actually, so I just didn't know.
A lot of people have that feeling. Let's talk about the letter that you wrote on July 30th. You asked Senator Feinstein to maintain confidentiality, quote, until...
Wait until she retrieves it.
I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to look for it. Which one?
Minutes, I think it's... Yeah.
Okay.
So stop the clock, will you?
It's in there someplace.
I found it. Sorry.
Okay. You asked Senator Feinstein to maintain confidentiality until we have had further opportunity to speak, and then said you were available to speak further, vacationing in the mid-Atlantic until August 7th. Is that correct?
Oh, the last line? Is that what you're... I'm now just catching up with you. Sorry, I'm a little slower. My mind is getting a little tired. I am available to speak further should you wish to discuss. I was in Delaware until August 7th.
Okay.
And after that, I went to New Hampshire and then back to California.
Did you talk with anybody about this letter before you sent it?
I talked with Anna Eshoo's office.
Okay. And why did you talk to Congresswoman Eshoo's office about that letter?
Because they were willing to hand-deliver it to Senator Feinstein.
Okay. Did anyone help you write the letter?
No.
Okay. After you sent your letter, did you or anyone on your behalf speak to Senator Feinstein personally or with any Senate staffer?
Yes.
Okay.
I had a phone call with Senator Feinstein.
Okay, and when was that?
That was while I was still in Delaware, so before August 7th.
Okay. And how many times did you speak with Senator Feinstein?
Once.
Okay. What did you talk about?
She asked me some questions about the incident.
Okay.
And I answered those questions.
Okay. Was that the extent of the gist of the conversation?
Yes, it was a fairly brief phone call.
Okay. Did you ever give Senator Feinstein or anyone else the permission to release that letter?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay. Between the letter date, July 30th and August the 7th, did you speak with any other person about your allegations?
Could you say the dates again?
Between the letter date of July 30th and August 7th, so while you were still in Delaware, did you speak with any other person about your allegations?
I'm just trying to remember what dates that...
Stop the...
You're asking her with the exclusion of any lawyers that she might have spoken with, correct?
Correct.
Oh, correct. I think correct then. I was interviewing lawyers, but I was not... speaking personally about it.
Aside from lawyers that you were seeking to possibly hire to represent mm-hmm. you, did you speak to anybody else about it during that period of time?
No.
Okay.
I was staying with my parents at the time.
Did you talk to them about it?
Definitely not.
Okay. So would it be fair to say that you retained counsel during that time period of July 30th to August 7th?
I can't remember the exact date, but it was the I was interviewing lawyers during that period of time, sitting in the car in the driveway and in the Walgreens parking lot in Rehoboth, Delaware. And
when or is
figure
it...
out how the whole system works of interviewing lawyers and how to pick one, et cetera. So
you testified earlier that you had you didn't see the need for lawyers, and now you're trying to hire them. What made you change your mind?
It seemed like most of the individuals that I had told, which didn't, the total was not very high, but those persons advised me to, at this point, get a lawyer for advice about whether to push forward or to stay back.
Did that include Congresswoman Eshoo and Senator Feinstein?
No.
Okay.
I want to thank Dr. Ford for what you said about acknowledging that we had said we'd come to California. Senator Blumenthal.
Thanks,
Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut.
Thank you for being here today, and just tell you I have found your testimony powerful and credible, and I believe you. You're a teacher, correct?
Correct.
Well, you have given America an amazing teaching moment. And you may have other moments in the classroom, but you have inspired and you have enlightened America. You have inspired and given courage to women to come forward, as they have done to every one of our offices and many other public places. You have inspired and you have enlightened men in America to listen respectfully to women survivors and men who have survived sexual attack. And that is a profound public service, regardless of what happens with this nomination. And so the teachers of America, people of America, should be really proud of what you have done. Let me tell you why I believe you. Not only because of the prior consistent statements and the polygraph tests and your request for an FBI investigation and your urging that this committee hear from other witnesses who could corroborate or dispute your story, but also you have been very honest about what you cannot remember. And someone composing a story can make it all come together in a seamless way, but someone who is honest, I speak from my experience as a prosecutor as well, is also candid about what she or he cannot remember. The senators on the other side of the aisle have been silent. This procedure is unprecedented in a confirmation hearing. But I want to quote one of my colleagues, Senator Lindsey Graham, in a book that he wrote in 2015 when he was describing his own service and very distinguished naval service as a trial lawyer. I'm not under oath. He said, okay, quote, of his prosecutions of rape cases, "I learned how much unexpected courage from a deep and hidden place it takes for a rape victim or sexually abused child to testify against their assailants. I learned how much courage from a deep and hidden place it takes for a rape victim or sexually abused child to testify against their assailants. If we agree on nothing else today, I hope on a bipartisan basis we can agree on how much courage it has taken for you to come forward. And I think you have earned America's gratitude." Now, there's been some talk about your requesting an FBI investigation, and you mentioned a point just a few minutes ago that you could better estimate the time that you ran into Mark Judge if you knew the time that he was working at that supermarket. That's a fact that could be uncovered by an FBI investigation that would help further elucidate your account. Would you like Mark Judge to be interviewed in connection with the background investigation and the serious, credible allegations that you've made?
That would be my preference. I'm not sure it's really up to me, but I certainly would feel like I could be more helpful to everyone if I knew the date that he worked at the Safeway so that I could give a more specific date of the assault.
Well, it's not up to you. It's up to the President of the United States. And his failure to ask for an FBI investigation, in my view, is tantamount to a cover-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Flake, Ms. Mitchell for Senator Flake.
Thank you. We've heard
Rachel
this morning
Mitchell, once again,
several times that you did take
Senator
a polygraph,
Flake.
And that was on August the 7th. Is that right?
I believe so. It's the day I was flying from BWI to Manchester, New Hampshire.
Okay. Why did you decide to take a polygraph?
I didn't see any reason not to do it.
Were you advised to do that?
Again, you're seeming to call for communications between counsel and client. I don't think you mean to do that. If you do, she shouldn't have to answer that.
Could you let her answer the extent to which she doesn't violate the relationship between you and Dr. Ford?
Okay, what do you understand?
And that was the attorney also speaking for Christine Blasey Ford. This is Pacifica Radio's live coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation
Based
hearing.
On the advice of the counsel, I was happy to undergo the polygraph test, although I found it extremely stressful, much longer than I anticipated. I told my whole life story, I felt like, but I endured it. It was fine.
I understand they can be that way. Have you ever taken any other polygraphs in your life?
Never.
Okay. You went to see a gentleman by the name of Jeremiah Hannafin to serve as the polygrapher. Did anyone advise you on that choice?
Dr. Blasey Ford is consulting with her lawyer in between questions.
Jerry Hannafin.
Yeah.
Okay. Did anyone advise you on that choice?
I don't understand. Yeah, I didn't choose him myself. He was the person that came to do the polygraph test.
Okay. He actually conducted the polygraph not in his office in Virginia, but actually at the hotel next to Baltimore Washington Airport. Is that right?
Correct.
Why was that location chosen for the polygraph?
I had left my grandmother's funeral at the Fort Lincoln Cemetery that day and was on tight schedule to get a plane to Manchester, New Hampshire. So he was willing to come to me, which was appreciated.
So he administered a polygraph on the day that you attended your grandmother's funeral?
Yeah, correct. Okay. Or it might have been the next day. I spent the night in the hotel. So I don't remember the exact day.
Have you ever had discussions with anyone besides your attorneys on how to take a polygraph?
Never.
And I don't just mean countermeasures, but I mean just any sort of tips or anything like that.
No, I was scared of the test itself, but was comfortable that I could tell the information and the test would reveal whatever it was going to reveal. I didn't expect it to be as long as it was going to be, so it was a little bit stressful.
Have you ever given tips or advice to somebody who was looking to take a polygraph test?
Never.
Okay. Did you pay for the polygraph yourself?
I don't think so.
Okay. Do you know who did pay for the polygraph?
Not yet, no.
Did you have the handwritten statement that you wrote out? Did anyone assist you in writing that statement?
No, but you can tell how anxious I was by the terrible handwriting.
We touched on it earlier. Did you know that the committee has requested not only the charts from the polygraph test, but also any audio or video recording of the polygraph test?
No.
Okay. Were you audio and video recorded when you were taking that test?
Okay, so I remember being hooked up to a machine, like being placed onto my body and being asked a lot of questions and crying a lot. That's my primary memory of that test. I don't know. I know he took laborious detail into explaining what he was going to be doing, but I was just focused on kind of what I was going to say and my fear about that. I wasn't listening to every detail about whether it was audio or video recorded.
Well, you were in a hotel room, right?
Correct.
Regular hotel room with a bed and bathroom?
No. It was a conference room. Okay. So I was sitting at a chair and he was behind me.
Did you note any cameras in the room?
Well, he had a computer set up, so I guess I assumed that he was somehow taping and recording me.
Okay, so you assumed you were being video and audio recorded?
Correct.
But you don't know for sure?
I don't know for sure.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to recess now for a half hour for lunch. Oh. Thank you, Dr. Ford.
Oh, we're going to keep going. No, okay.
Yeah.
So 10 minutes after. This is 90.7 KBOO Portland.
Listening to the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh this morning. We've been listening to Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. They are taking a half-hour break. We'll hear more from Dr. Blasey Ford in just a moment, and then later on in the afternoon, we will hear from Brett Kavanaugh. I'm Mitch Jezrich with Antonia Yuhas.
And coming up shortly, we're going to bring some other guests on with us. Sonali Kolhatkar will be joining us, as well as Rebecca Solnit and many others. In the last 2 hours and 45 minutes, during which Dr. Blasey Ford was testifying, she did towards the end say, you know, it's been a very long time. I'm getting tired. I'm not sure that I can, you know, respond to all of these questions, because the Republicans did choose to have a prosecutor, Rachel Mitchell, ask, you know, very detailed, very, somewhat complicated questions for Dr. Blasey Ford. It seems clear that she's building towards trying to potentially catch her in misstatements and irregularities in her testimony, and it is being treated very much like a trial as opposed to your typical hearing, and certainly as opposed to your typical confirmation hearing. Dr. Blasey Ford has been moved and quite emotional at different points during the testimony. Most recently, she was brought to tears when Senator Coons asked her to respond to the statement, "Boys will be boys," as a common refrain in response to the behavior of men who commit sexual assault. And it's been quite an intense 2 hours and 45 minutes of testimony from Dr. Blasey Ford.
Sure has. We're going to have more analysis coming up for you, but first we're going to find out what else is going on in the world with these news headlines with Eileen Alfandary.
Christine Blasey Ford has told the Senate Judiciary Committee her strongest memory of being sexually assaulted by Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh is the laughter by Kavanaugh and his friend Mark Judge. Blasey has described the assault and its lifelong aftermath. Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin asked if she was certain Kavanaugh was the assailant.
Last night, the Republican staff of this committee released to the media a timeline that shows that they've interviewed two people who claim they were the ones who actually assaulted you. I'm asking you to address this new defense of mistaken identity directly. Dr. Ford, with what degree of certainty do you believe Brett Kavanaugh assaulted you?
100%.
Democrats are questioning Blasey in five-minute rounds. Republicans are using their five-minute rounds for questioning by a female Phoenix prosecutor. White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said President Trump was watching the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on a slight delay. Kavanaugh is set to be questioned after Blasey. The group Women's March announced a Capitol protest at 12:30 Eastern Time, which should have started about 15 minutes ago. It asked for national actions all over the country with 1 minute of silence and solidarity with Dr. Blasey Ford and survivors everywhere. It asked people to hold their hands high to show the message, "I believe," written on the palms. Protesters swarmed the Capitol building today. Some of them were kicked out of Senator Hatch's office. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein arrived at the White House for a previously scheduled meeting with President Trump to discuss his future. It wasn't clear whether the meeting would go forward. Trump earlier had said he was focused on today's Senate Judiciary Committee hearing and might want to delay the Rosenstein meeting. Yesterday, Trump said he'd certainly prefer not to fire Rosenstein and noted Rosenstein had denied reports that he discussed possibly secretly recording the president and using the Constitution's 25th Amendment to remove him from office. Rosenstein is overseeing Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian election meddling. Congress has approved a bill to keep the government open through December 7th as lawmakers move to avert a government shutdown, which was looming next week. The $854 billion bill also funds the military and a host of civilian agencies for the next year. The House approved the bill on a vote of 361-61 a week after the Senate approved it. The measure now goes to Trump, who has said he will sign it. Trump made that pledge despite his frustration that the bill doesn't pay for his long-promised expanded wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, a fact Trump called ridiculous. Haitian President Jovenel Moïse says increasingly violent hurricanes are exacerbating problems in extremely poor countries like his. He's urging world leaders to do more to tackle climate change. Haiti's president told the UN General Assembly that small island nations emit little greenhouse gases, but they suffer the largest part of the damage caused by more frequent, more violent hurricanes. He said Hurricane Matthew in 2016 caused damage in Haiti equivalent to 32% of gross domestic product. He said that aggravates deep poverty and social tensions. Haiti's president urged countries and companies to follow through on promises made in Paris last year to help vulnerable countries adapt to climate change. President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement. The United Nations top human rights body has agreed to set up a team to collect evidence of alleged crimes committed in Myanmar since 2011 that could one day be used to prosecute violators in court. The team's work is expected to cover the security crackdown that began in August of last year. The Rohingya military and pro-government mobs raped and killed men, women, and children and torched entire villages. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Pacifica Radio.
And this is a Pacifica Radio special broadcast of the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh. Officially, this is day five of the hearing, even though the hearing wrapped up last week. And I'm Mitch Jezerich, along with Antonia Yuhas. And I have another voice in my headphones, just to let the engineer know. And what we are at right now is a 30-minute break. And during this 30-minute break, we will have analysis for you. And once the break is over, we will go back to the hearing. I do want to bring into the conversation in our coverage here Sonali Kohatkar. Sonali Kohatkar is host of the show Rising Up with Sonali. You can hear that show on KPFA, also on KPFK and Free Speech TV. Sonali, good afternoon or good morning to you now here on the West Coast. Let's begin with your reaction of what we've seen so far. And we are having some technical difficulties. Again, we do have a voice in the background here, and I don't know if that's going out on the air or just through our own headphones. But let me turn to my co-host, and you can even take off your headphones if that is problematic.
Okay, thank you, Mitch.
And so, Antonia, just quickly, what is your reaction so far?
You know, my reaction so far is that this testimony from Dr. Blasey Ford has been very profound, very detailed, clearly very important for the United States Senate to hear in order to judge whether Brett Kavanaugh should be hired for this job of being a lifelong member of the United States Supreme Court. She has been very deliberate, very detailed. She's also been addressed, I think, you know, in a particularly unprecedented way with the choice of the Republicans to have Rachel Mitchell, a prosecutor, come in and ask questions in a very, very much as in a trial, which, of course, this is not, trying to assess the veracity of Dr. Blasey Ford's accusations. But, of course, this is only happening one way. There's only a prosecutor on the side of those trying to undermine the validity of Dr. Blasey Ford's statements. Dr. Blasey Ford has really held herself and responded. And, you know, we're getting a sense of what the prosecutor is trying to get to. It seems to be finding places where there are potentially inconsistencies in the statements that Dr. Blasey Ford has made. And of course, it seems likely that the reason that the Republicans have chosen to have the prosecutor, Rachel Mitchell, speak on behalf of each of them, because they each have 5 minutes to ask questions, but instead of doing that, they have Mitchell speak for them, ask questions for them, is because, as is the case now, as has always been the case in the history of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee, all the Republicans are men. And it seems quite clear that they did not want to continue that problem of having male after male after male after male asking these very detailed questions. And Dr. Blasey Ford went into quite, you know, intimate detail as to what took place on that evening in 1982, when she says that Brett Kavanaugh assaulted her, and she added more details into that into her testimony today in describing what took place. And some of the most emotional testimony for her and for, I think, and for myself and for listeners was describing not only the assault but the laughter that she says was shared between Brett Kavanaugh and Mike Judge while the assault was taking place.
So we are going to have more analysis. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick 30-second break that we're going to allow radio stations to identify themselves that are airing our coverage. When we come back, we'll be joined by both Sonalico Hutkar and Rebecca Solnit. Stay tuned.
You are listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. Also heard on K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Okay, we are in the midst of our Pacifica radio station live coverage of the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. We have finished with an initial block of 2 hours and 45 minutes of questioning of Dr. Blasey Ford, and they are on a break about 15 more minutes left of this break, and then they will return to continue the questioning of Dr. Blasey Ford. We are very happy to have two guests to bring for you right now. First, Sonalico Hutkar, a journalist, activist, artist, founder, host, and executive producer of Pacifica's popular program, that's a lot of alliteration, Rising Up with Sonali, which airs on KPFK and KPFA, and also as a TV show on Free Speech TV. Thanks so much for being with us, Sonali.
It's my pleasure, Antonia.
Let's start with you, Sonali. Again, please just give us your analysis on what has taken place so far today.
Well, I think as you mentioned earlier, we're seeing the really interesting back and forth between Rachel Mitchell, who's a special prosecutor from Arizona, and Dr. Ford, and it does look like a court case. I was impressed by the respectfulness of Mitchell, but you could tell that there were certain places where she was trying to trip up Dr. Ford in terms of whether Dr. Ford really did have a fear of flying or not. Well, if she had a fear of flying to Washington, D.C., how come she's traveled all over the world? And she was, of course, also questioning her around the polygraph, whether she has ever had any help learning how to cheat a polygraph test. She did it much more respectfully than I'm paraphrasing, but you could see that was the intent. And Dr. Ford is a very smart woman. And even though she's showing a very vulnerable part of herself today to the world, because, of course, she's obviously feeling vulnerable, she is very, very careful and very smart. And knows how not to get tripped up. And I'm really impressed with how she's holding up. I wish the Democrats would have a little bit more substantive questioning on their part. A lot of it seems to be grandstanding, and then every now and then they throw in something substantive. I think they have an opportunity to ask a lot of questions. I would like to see them bringing up Mark Judge more often and why Mark Judge isn't there answering questions under oath rather than just submitting a document saying that nothing happened. And so they do bring it up, but not often enough. So I wish Democrats would use their time a little bit more wisely.
Thank you very much. And we're also now going to bring on writer, historian, activist Rebecca Solnit, the author of some 20 books, including the critically important Men Explain Things to Me. Thank you so much for being with us, Rebecca.
Good morning, Antonia.
Good morning, Rebecca. Can you share with us your reactions to these first nearly 3 hours of this hearing?
There's two pieces to it for me. One is that Ms. Ford or Dr. Ford is an incredibly compelling person in both her erudition and precision and in the emotional power of her story, as Sonali pointed out. The other is that this whole thing is kind of a travesty. It's what Republicans the minimum that Republicans have to do to pretend to be having a real hearing about Kavanaugh rather than calling the other witnesses, having an FBI investigation, or in regard to other things about him, letting us look, or letting the Judiciary Committee look at the 100,000 pages of documents about his role in the Bush administration in relationship to torture and other important issues.
Do you think that it would have been preferable, you know, not to have this testimony at this time, but instead to wait and wait to have an investigation prior to hearing from Blasey Ford, from potentially Julie Swetnick, from potentially Deborah Ramirez, or to hear from the women first and then have an investigation?
The norm, which they did with Anita Hill, was to have an FBI investigation. That the Republicans are refusing it is further evidence that they don't care and they don't want to know what happens. And there's been a lot of rather shocking statements by conservative and right-wing Republican men, including a lot of elected officials, that they don't really care if he raped people or not, or assaulted people or not. And, you know, I had assumed that they would defend him on the grounds that they don't believe he did this, but they're really putting out, in many cases, a boys will be boys. Bret Stephens, the awful New York Times columnist, called all this antics in the New York Times this morning. And so they don't really care. They don't really want to know. They're trying to look legitimate while railroading it all through.
So far, Senator Feinstein is the only person who has addressed the issue at all of institutional failure. She said at the top with her introduction that institutions have failed women and continue to make it far more difficult than it should be to be supported to bring forward accusations such as these. Do you feel, Rebecca, that this moment is setting things forward or back?